Hello, listeners, and welcome to this first ever episode of the Northwest Young Fabian podcast. We're starting this podcast because we really want to start looking at many different ideas. We want to look at current affairs as well as ongoing debates inside the country and the Labour Party. We want to talk about important issues for going forward for the centre-left and social democracy. And we also want to take a nice Northwest slant because the Northwest is the best. So the two hosts of this will be me, Tom Lang, and
me, Owen Farnworth.
And we'll be looking at many different issues for the future of social democracy. Today's episode, we're going to be talking particularly about trans rights. A bit about me then. I'm the disability officer of the Northwest Young Fabians.
I'm the under-19s officer for the Northwest Young Fabians. I joined the Labour Party in November, joined the Fabians about 4 weeks ago now. So I want to get more young people under the age of 19 into the Fabians, helping develop Labour policy and putting their voice forward on the left.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Owen. And obviously this episode is being recorded at about 12:30 on the 26th of July. I am 21 tomorrow. So here we go. You're hearing my voice as a 20-year-old, because when this goes up, I'll be 21. Yeah. So we're now joined by Arthur Weber, and we're going to be chatting about trans rights. And one of the things I was really curious to ask you, Arthur, is first of all, trans rights within the Labour Party. So what's it like to be a trans rights activist inside the Labour Party at the moment?
I feel like it's quite frustrating, and it has been for a long time, because there is this sort of assumption amongst a lot of people that perhaps don't know any trans people that we are all middle-class students. And so they have this idea that the Labour Party isn't ours and that we're like infiltrating it and using it for our own ends, when I've been a Labour Party member since before I came out as trans. So to me, that's quite offensive to suggest that it isn't my place to be naturally, when you know, the party champions equality, justice and human rights. And to me, that is the natural home of a trans person. So to suggest it isn't really ours and we're just using it for our own agenda, it really bothers me. And it has done since this stuff started cropping up in the general election.
And do you feel that's... Are you encountering that, say, is it just the Labour Twitter sphere, which can often be very damaging for members' mental health? I know lots of people on a wide issue. Or are you encountering that opposition inside your CLPs, your branches, etc.?
Luckily, my CLP and branch are incredibly supportive. I was actually really nervous to talk to them about it, because I didn't start going to CLP meetings and stuff until after I'd come out as trans. So I knew that it was something that I was going to have to say at some point, because I'd had Twitter and I was very open about being trans on Twitter since before I started going. So I knew it was a conversation I had to have. But my branch and CLP are fantastic. Some members of my CLP exec have trans relatives, so it caused no issues at all, really. But online, again, it's not really so much from like Labour Twitter people as we would assume Labour Twitter people, like younger people that are constantly arguing over whether Keir's a Blairite or not. It tends to be commentators for like The Guardian and things like that that are accusing trans people of not really belonging there. So it's, to be honest, it's more the more high profile people that are causing this issue than actual Labour members. I don't get that much stick from actual Labour members on there. It's the political commentators that accuse us of not really belonging in the party. I've never had... Well, actually, no, it's a lie. Labour Twitter's most notorious transphobe is actually from my CLP. So it would be a lie if I said that I didn't have any problems with Labour Twitter, because unfortunately I had to deal with her. But outside of that, no real problems from Labour Party members.
Just following up on what you said about your CLP, Arthur, obviously I'd imagine you talked to many other trans activists who are in Labour. Do you find that... Obviously, your CLP is not too bad, as you just said, but do you find that those CLPs are accepting of people like yourself, or is it just yours kind of thing?
I think mine does stand out. We actually, during the general election, some CLPs started, actually, I think it might have been shortly before, but some CLPs started passing motions in support of groups like A Woman's Place and Fair Play for Women that advocate for the exclusion of trans people. So I put out on Twitter, you know, if you're the only trans person in your CLP, like, contact me. I'll make a group chat of trans people to make it clear that you're not alone in the party. And that got an awful lot of traction. And eventually the Labour campaign for trans rights was born out of that, because people in that group chat decided they didn't just want to be friends with everybody here. They wanted to use this network to mean something. But no, it's pretty uncommon, I would say, for trans people to feel as welcomed in their CLP as I do. Obviously, throughout the whole of the UK, I think there's only 3 trans Labour councillors, or at least there's only 3 that I know of. So it's incredibly rare for trans people to be as supported in their CLP as I am, to run for positions, to run for council as I am, which is a real shame, because, you know, it shouldn't matter if you're trans or not as to whether you are capable of performing any kind of position on an exec or for a council. But because such CLP meetings are such an unwelcome environment for a lot of trans people, it really discourages them. And it's sad, because there's a lot of talent in many people that I know that are discouraged from running from any kind of office. So the Labour Party at membership level, as well as with our commentators, really needs to change if trans people are going to flourish within the party.
Definitely, yeah.
So then, talking about the party, perhaps moving on to the national front, is how much support do you feel that you're getting from the top of the party, say the NEC, the leader's office, and the disciplinary procedures against those who are transphobic and have been hateful towards trans members?
In terms of disciplinary procedures, I'm unaware of anybody that's ever been suspended or got in any trouble for being transphobic, even though, as we've discussed, it is a widespread problem. Mm-hmm. In terms of the NEC, we've had a lot of issues with that, because during the last general election, there was an inclusion of a line about protecting single-sex spaces, which, for to people that aren't aware of trans issues, there would be no problem in it, but that's a dog whistle for excluding trans women from these spaces. So, and that was included by the request of the NEC. LGBT Labour had nothing to do with it. So again, we've had problems with the NEC, and obviously with the leadership. We've been trying to get in contact with them since the stuff about GRA reform and Liz Truss's comments back in April, and it's only really this week that they've decided to start talking openly about it. I'm working very closely with LGBT Labour. I'm not actually on the exec. I think a lot of people think that I am, because I have a reasonable platform and I shout about trans stuff all the time, but I'm not actually on the LGBT Labour exec, but I work with them, and they have been behind the scenes really, really trying to get in touch with the leadership to, and in touch with obviously Marsha, who's the Equalities Minister, to get them to come out more vocally in support. And it's only again this week really that LGBT Labour have managed to get in contact with them, so we haven't really been feeling the support that we needed when we were facing, you know, attacks from the media and from all these commentators and from some people within our own party. We really needed Keir and the others to stand up and say no, and unfortunately they haven't until this week, which has meant that an awful lot of trans people have left the party since the general election. The majority of trans people, actually, I would say that I befriended during the general election campaign with, like, in person through them coming to campaign in Peterborough, because it's a marginal seat. Like, most of them have left the party now because they don't feel safe here under his leadership, which is sad, because everybody should feel safe within the Labour Party. But it's the way things are at the moment. And obviously we're hoping that things will change, especially with the NEC elections coming up. We're hoping that we will get a group of very supportive people to be on the executive committee. But mood isn't good among trans people within the party. And it's really sad, because obviously I very much feel that this is my place to be, and seeing other people who are similar to me leave and say that it's not safe for people like us, it makes you question whether you should be there either. And I have had doubts many times over the last few months of whether, you know, am I harming the cause in essence by condoning how the party are treating us.
One of the things on top of that then is, you mentioned the NEC elections. There's obviously been some upset with some of the candidates on the centre-left grassroots alliance slate, or the left slate, inverted commas. So will LGBT Labour and maybe the campaign for trans rights be looking into which candidates are the best ones going forward? I don't want to get into naming candidates and yeah. Say... will they be looking at telling members who signed the pledges so that members are better informed about?
Yes, certainly I've been, because I am I'm a member of LGBT Labour and a member of the Labour Campaign for Trans Rights, but because I started the group chat that sort of founded the thing, they tend to keep me more personally involved, because even though I'm not on the executive committee, I suppose they feel, you know, that they should keep me in the loop, because it ended up occurring because of me. So I know certainly the Labour Campaign for Trans Rights are intending on reaching out to all candidates to, you know, try and make contacts to clarify everything, to see whether, you know, because obviously there's a possibility that comments and things were taken out of context and things like that. So we're wanting to really understand where you know, everybody stands, regardless of whether you are considered to have made transphobic comments and things in the past. They want to reach out to everybody to see where they stand on the issue. And hopefully everybody will get back to us regardless of whether they've considered to have a problematic past or not, because you'd hope that, considering how much a contentious issue it seems to be on the left at the moment and how much support the Labour Campaign for Trans Rights got when it immediately came out, that they would want to clarify their views, and they would want to be understanding, because it would look bad on their reputation, because I know that a lot of people are considering breaking the left slate to vote against candidates that have a dodgy record on it. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes to try and, you know, bring people round if they can be brought round. And
how we get more people within the party to become allies, basically, how do we make it, how do we educate people to become kind of more accepting of the trans rights issues, and how would we difficult support? So would you look at, so you're obviously looking at trying to get candidates to sign pledges. Would you try and say, would you actively be saying to people, if they don't sign them, don't vote for these people effectively? And how can we educate people?
I don't think that we would say don't vote for somebody because they haven't signed the pledges, because for a lot of, certainly during the momentum elections, as far as I'm aware, like, there were some people that didn't sign them because we couldn't get in contact with them, because obviously, like, people are very busy and things like that. So there may be legitimate reasons, like they didn't see the email or something like that. I would say obviously education is key, and something that I've personally wanted for a really long time was for there to be some kind of ally training that you could deliver in CLPs. I know certainly when I was at uni, the Jewish Labour Movement and other Jewish groups created like an anti-Semitism training, so that you learn how to spot it and you learn how to be a better Jewish ally. And I thought that would be great to be replicated for trans issues, because I certainly didn't feel particularly well educated on anti-Semitism until I saw the slides and things for this presentation, and I felt a lot better. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, accidentally get themselves involved in these sorts of things, you know, because they are uneducated. So I know somebody who I'm very good friends with who signed the Labour Women's Declaration because he thought it was just a feminist thing, and I had to explain, no, it's their wanting, like, he's a friend of mine, so obviously he's got no issue with trans people. He didn't realise, because he's not educated on these issues, that what they were actually advocating for was the exclusion of trans women, and it wasn't a feminist thing. So certainly stuff that I've done is a lot of CLPs quite often invite me to go and talk at their CLP meetings, and I try to be educational. If you see my Twitter, you know, I'm much better at, you know, making jokes and things like that, but I do try to keep it so that there's like a reasonable amount of explanation of various things, as well as, you know, I'm using anecdotes to keep people engaged, because I feel like even on a very basic level there are things that people don't understand. Like, some people don't understand the difference between a trans man and a trans woman, and that causes a whole lot of issues. So I think a lot of people are neutral on it because they don't understand, and would be trans allies if they had somebody, not necessarily me, although I do enjoy traveling around the country to be able to do this stuff. I actually did a talk in Scotland once, which was great. If we had more of us that were able to go out and deliver some kind of, you know, talk or training, I think that would turn people's heads a lot, because I think people are willing to listen. It's just there aren't enough of us that feel comfortable enough, in essence, to be able to go and do it. Obviously, it takes a lot of self-confidence to go to, you know, a place that, you know, you've had. But I usually get invited by like one member of an exec or whatever, so I usually know one person in the room. when I've been invited to go and talk there. And obviously it takes a lot of self-confidence to be able to go, I'm going to be stepping into a room full of people who I don't know and try to educate them on why you shouldn't hate people like me. And so that's very scary. And I feel like a lot of trans people perhaps wouldn't have the confidence to be able to go and do that. So I certainly wouldn't have done until I was on hormones. There was no way you would get me in any kind of public speaking area. So I think it's quite difficult to be able to educate people because there are so few of us that feel safe enough to be able to go and do so.
One final thing I really want to ask about is then to move on to the national scene, because can you maybe explain to our listeners who maybe don't know the ins and outs of it and what the government's doing? Because I'm sure there were the government's U-turning and there's been a lot of upset about this. Can you maybe explain in more detail about what the government U-turn is and why it's so worrying?
I think there's a lot of confusion about what even the law is about, because the consultation that the government did a couple of years ago, they had questions that deliberately conflated the Gender Recognition Act and the Equality Act, which are two very separate pieces of legislation, which has meant that people are very, very confused about what it actually means. I had to explain it to my own parents because they were reading through this and they're like, but how does that relate to that? I'm like, it doesn't. The government has deliberately done it to try and make it look like they're making massive legal change when they're not really. So the Gender Recognition Act is just to change your birth certificate, your marriage certificate, and your death certificate. That's it. It doesn't give you access to single-sex spaces at all. It doesn't change the way that you can access medication. It doesn't change anything like that. It is literally about a piece of paper that you keep in your house to allow you to get a job or to get married. That is it. But unfortunately, the Equality Act is about protections for you as a trans person. So it says that you can enter, you know, you can use the bathroom of your choice. That's what the Equality Act is about. The Equality Act isn't being changed. So it is literally just about this little piece of paper. And the way to get this piece of paper is very complicated. It's very expensive. I've actually got on the bed next to me, obviously, this is just my voice, so you can't see it, but I've actually got all of my evidence that I need to get mine changed, because you have to provide various bits of evidence over the last 2 years of your life to prove that you've been living as the gender that you are. You need 2 medical reports, you need to sign a statutory declaration, you need to do all of this kind of stuff. And that's what we've been asking for reform, because we think that having to collect evidence of your life for 2 years, having to pay £140 to even apply, to, you know, having to sign a declaration saying that you're going to be this way until you die, all of this stuff is very burdensome and very difficult for a trans person to have to do. So the reforms that people are asking for is just to make this a little bit easier. It's nothing to do with whether we should be allowed to go in gym changing rooms or anything like that. It's just about whether we can get this piece of paper a little bit easier, because so few trans people actually have one, that really it should indicate that the system is broken and that it needs reform. And so the proposals were to make this easier, so to have a way of self-identifying rather than, which you have to do anyway, by the way, to get a, you know, you can change your driving license, you can change your passport and every other piece of documentation by self-identifying. So it is only this one piece of paper that you need to provide these masses of evidence for. And so we were wanting a similar system to passport and that instead. And that's all it was about. And the government's obviously, considering the way they ran the consultation, considering it's been 2 years since the consultation closed and they still haven't properly released the results they were leaked to the press, it's very clear the government didn't exactly want to have to reform it, and they were just doing it because everybody had been nagging them for so long. And so are trying to get away with not having to do anything at all. And it's been 2 years now since the consultation closed, so everybody's quite frustrated that there's been talk of actually making it more difficult, when so that everybody will just accept if they decide not to make it more difficult and keep it the same, and that'll be a celebration. Oh yes, they haven't made it harder, but the whole point of the process was to make it easier actually. So there's a lot of frustration and obviously a lot of confusion, because people are being told that the Gender Recognition Act means one thing when it actually doesn't. And it's just created a whole hell sphere, because pretty much nobody understands the law. Pretty much nobody understands what the government is trying to do to the law, because it seems to change every other week. Because, you know, I'm being told from insiders and things who are working with the government on this stuff that, you know, they're going to reform it this way, and then the next week it's this way. So So everybody's just very, very confused. It's all up in the air, and it's making trans people very, very tired and frightened because this has been going on for so long. And yet there's a very real possibility that won't even get reformed at all. And that will be something worth celebrating because of talks of making it even worse than it already is.
Quickly coming in on it, on the national scale as well, how do you think celebrities' comments such as J.K. Rowling have affected the trans community?
Rowling has such a big platform, and she hasn't gone the way that Linehan did when Linehan was outright calling trans people paedophiles all the time. So even a lot of people who agree with their viewpoint had stopped listening to him because he was so toxic, whereas Rowling is where he was a couple of years ago, right at the very beginning of this sort of transphobia spiral where she's wording things very carefully and making it seem like it's reasonable. And to someone who doesn't understand these issues, perhaps would see it as reasonable, which is worrying because obviously she has a following of 14.5 million people on Twitter who, by the looks of it, don't seem to engage with her very much. But it means that because she has such a big audience, it can convert people to believing this way if they perhaps don't follow any trans people themselves to say, you know, this isn't true, what she's come out with, you know, is a fabrication, it's based on your dodgy science and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's exposing like a much bigger audience to this viewpoint than I think ever before. I don't think there's been anybody that's gone so hard on the whole gender critical thing and has had that kind of platform. Obviously, we've seen stuff on the BBC and things like that from that kind of viewpoint. Whereas with Rowling, you know, she's broadcasting it to her followers. You know, anybody can log onto Twitter and then see it. And, you know, it's very difficult for trans. I think it's particularly difficult because a lot of younger trans people like myself grew up with her books. You know, I still have Harry Potter stuff in my room that I just can't bring myself to get rid of. And so, you know, it particularly hurts these people who have looked up to her and read these wonderful stories about accepting everybody and friendship and all that kind of stuff, to now see that actually this woman doesn't agree with you being in a public space, doesn't agree with you being able to access medical care, and not only doesn't agree with it, but is broadcasting it to her 14 million followers. It's scary and it's upsetting for a lot of people.
That's awful that is so out there. And one final question I want to ask then, Arthur, is regarding, are you concerned about the way social media's companies' roles in this?
I feel like they should. I think, again, it's an education problem. So a lot of people that be working for these social media companies perhaps don't understand trans issues themselves. So when these tweets are being flagged up, they don't understand why it's offensive. So why would they take it down? And, you know, that's a problem. But I suppose, you know, Twitter is just quite bad on pretty much any form of discrimination. Obviously, we've seen very high profile people go on racist rants and things like that, and their Twitter accounts are kept up. So I think it's not so much about, I suppose it is about the company, but it's also about the person who's putting it out there. So Twitter will quite easily take down, you know, because obviously after you report stuff, Twitter gets back to you once they've taken the action. And quite often, you know, if I've reported somebody that's like misgendered a friend of mine or whatever, if they've got like under 1,000 followers, that person's Twitter account will probably be deleted. But J.K. Rowling can continue to go on her thing. Obviously, Graham Linehan was allowed to go on for 2 or 3 years, calling people paedophiles and all sorts of stuff. And nothing happened to them because they are higher profile. And I think Twitter needs to address that double standard, if anything, because certainly from, you know, analysing what happened with Linehan, only a couple of thousand people actually bothered to follow, like move over to another platform with him once his account was taken down. So there are actually very few people that, you know, care about hating on us that much. So once you remove the figurehead, I suppose, it will go away. These people, certainly the more rabid people that have moved over to follow Graham on other platforms, they don't, you know, they are very, very few in comparison to the overall number of followers that a person has. So I feel like Twitter would be better off, perhaps, I wouldn't say better off, you know, ignoring the smaller accounts, because obviously some people with, you know, anonymous accounts will sit there all day and go through various hashtags and attack trans people. but they really, really need to focus in on the figureheads of these kinds of movements, whether it be against trans people, whether it be against a particular race or religion. They need to focus in on, you know, the celebrities that are doing this perhaps more, because they are less accountable for their actions than the people who have smaller accounts. And it's them that are radicalizing people and making people hate people for difference, rather than, you know, a random person with no profile picture with 200 followers. Like, they're not going to change anybody's mind, but it's these celebrities that are. And Twitter and other social media companies really need to hone in and not be afraid of taking down things that people with bigger platforms say that are offensive to people, because I suppose they're afraid of a backlash from people with massive followings like Rowling. But the point is, they're hurting an awful lot of people, and you really need to address that, as well as all of the people that will just make a new account once they get removed. So,
thank you for coming on the show, Arthur. And what I'll say is, if you want to plug your Twitter so that everyone should go follow you, because you are very outspoken about this and you are very good on this on Twitter, and you and I've learned a lot myself from just your tweets. So
I'm glad to hear that, because I don't think I do serious activism very well. Like, as I've said, when I get invited to CLPs, it tends to be like one ongoing anecdote and joke, because I'm far better at making a joke out of it than doing serious stuff. But yeah, my Twitter is at Bernie Tranders, because I thought that was hilarious when Bernie was going for the US Democratic nomination. So yeah, everything in my life is a joke, so feel free to follow and listen to that.
Well, no, we really appreciate you coming on to be our first guest on this podcast, and I'm sure maybe you'll be on at some point in the future. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I haven't been on a podcast before, so this is a first for me too.
Thanks so much, Arthur, for joining us on this podcast. Bring you a news bulletin.
So this week, face coverings have been made mandatory in shops. Johnson has celebrated a year in office and has admitted in an interview with Laura Koonsberg that he could have done things differently regarding COVID-19. And the Tories voted a bill down to protect the NHS from a trade deal this week, despite saying in the general election that they would they wouldn't do such a thing. The UK government has brought back in quarantine for people returning from Spain and Spanish territories on the Spanish mainland.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Owen. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.